Hi, guys. I think we'll go ahead and get started. So if you haven't had a chance to partake of the goodies in the back, feel free to do that as we talk. Today we're talking about diversity. Those of you who were at DD Grand Rounds know we were talking about obesity in Latino populations, and we're going to continue that theme now in talking about what we do here at the Kennedy Center in terms of reaching out to diverse populations. And we're so excited about all of the extra surprises and goodies and stuff that our speakers have brought today. So I'm going to turn it over to Carol Moore Slater, who has been the coordinator of this project, and let her tell you a little bit more about what we're going to do and introduce her co-speakers.
Great. Thank you so much, Terry. And I guess I'll start off first with, I've got two pages of notes that are floating around somewhere here, and if somebody sees them, that'd be great, and if not, I'll just shoot from the hip. You know, that is kind of typical for me. We're going to talk today about reaching out to diverse communities, and Pathfinder has been so incredibly enriched and lucky for the last 6 years to be able to pursue this project. And I want to begin by just introducing the people who are involved. Carolina Meyerson has been here, what, about 4.5, 5 years? 4 years. It's been, oh, perfect. Thank you. Terrific. Very responsible for a lot of the expansions, especially in the Kennedy Center. And Cecilia Milo-Romi, I think Cecilia, who has been absolutely tremendous in terms of our community outreach. And then Claudia. Unfortunately, Claudia is not here today. Most of you know that she has left us to actually finish her master's degree. I mean, we kept her as long as we possibly could. And our new staff, Aram Torabian. I always have a hard time with names. Good. Back here in the back. We're going to talk about reaching out to diverse communities. What is cultural diversity? And I looked at all kinds of definitions and came up with this one that I really liked the best. It's from the Institute for Cultural Partnerships in Pennsylvania. And that is, it's a mosaic of individuals and groups with varying backgrounds, experiences, styles, perceptions, values, and beliefs. And other differences include gender, race, ethnicity, age, ability, disability, education, sexual preferences, cultural values, religion, and personal experiences. So as individuals in this room, we all bring our own cultural diversity to not only this job here at the Kennedy Center, but also in the community. Pathfinder, again, for the last 5.5 years has been working in this area. And we have been truly, truly enriched with the cultural backgrounds from Mexico, Argentina, Chile, and most recently, Kurdistan. And I just have to say, before I go any further, not only has it been enriching to have people at Pathfinder on our staff that are so good, we couldn't do all of this, any of this, without the tremendous support from the Kennedy Center, from Elise's guidance, from Jan, Kylie, Sue, Peggy, on and on. That's made this the project that I think it really kind of is. It all started with a grant. And that was back in 2004. It was kind of a surprise for us, but the council and the Kennedy Center applied for an ADD Family Support Grant on cultural diversity. The primary purpose was to provide outreach to the underserved and unserved and underserved Spanish population in the Nashville, Davidson County area. It was about an 18-month grant, so we pretty well hit the ground running. And up until this point, we had an office in our room. Claudia was actually working with us, and we were in our office trying to do outreach from our office and discovered that, you know, it really didn't work very well. And the grant gave us the opportunity to move out to the community. So we moved into the Woodbine Community Center, had an office along with Catholic Charities, and in that particular community, there were a lot of Spanish-speaking families. That's where a lot of them lived. And in a 12-month period, it just exploded. I think we saw 177 families that first year. And that is in Davidson County and in Nashville, and it was all because we were out in the community. The other thing that we were doing is not only having an office in the community, we started networking and building relationships, especially with the Mental Health Association of Middle Tennessee, which had a really good network going. And we bought into that and started attending 15 to 20 community meetings a quarter. That also made all the difference in the world. But I'm going to let Cecilia tell you a little bit more about how far we've come. Today we're going to cover a couple of areas. One is a Hispanic outreach program at Pathfinder, and this is all the diversity programs within the Kennedy Center, including the Helpline, Camino Segura database, which, by the way, started out as a Nashville-Davidson County-only database. Liaison to the Division of Intellectual Disability Services and Family Support Programs. I think some of you, or maybe you all know, that we do have a grant from DIDS to work with individuals who speak Spanish in those programs. Our parent support group, then all the tremendous outreach into the Kennedy Center activities that have been really enriched families that we've worked with, as well as the community outreach. Then Aram is going to talk to you a little bit about Kurdish outreach activities, and Elise will finish up with plans for the African-American outreach activities and kind of the future. So I'm going to turn it over to Cecilia.
As you can see, at my age, it's very hard to change your habits. And technology is not one of my forte. But first of all, I wanted to thank everybody for being here, and also for my hiding friends that have been able to share with us all their roots, where they have brought from their countries that surround us, the room. And I really appreciate that. Also, we have some Kurdish pastry. We have some Chilean pan amasado. We have some goodies from Argentina that Carolina brought. And also from Colombia, we have arepas. So enjoy them. And here we are with this wonderful program that I'm part of it. First of all, we have a statewide helpline, not only in English, but in Spanish. And just to give you a little data, between 2008 and 2009, we serve about 260 individuals. This is just in our outreach, Hispanic outreach. From them, 26, they were preschool age children, and 183, approximately, they were school age children. As you can see, that's most of our individuals coming from, and about 51 adults. We made about 1,450 calls on their behalf. Camino Seguro database. It all started, as Carol pointed out, here in Middle Tennessee. Right now, it spread to West Tennessee, and right now, we had just finished launching our East Tennessee Camino Seguro. And now, Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee, it is based from here, from Pathfinder at the Kennedy Center. It's an interactive database of bilingual service providers, Spanish and English, and as I say, it is statewide at this time. It was designed by our
great guys from the Kennedy Center. It's supervised by the Pathfinder Hispanic team, and it's been maintained by approximately 15 local disability and or Spanish agencies in the West, Middle, and East Tennessee. This is a little bit different from Pathfinder because it includes nonprofit social services, mental health, and of course, disability agencies. And as you well know, and we're still cheering for Carolina and Claudia and the Kennedy Center, we received the ACE UCD 2009 Leadership in Diversity Award. That was a great thing for all of us, a great recognition. I started with Pathfinder at the Kennedy Center as a liaison to DEEDS and Family Support Services. We serve as a liaison for Spanish-speaking families on Tennessee Division of Intellectual Disability Services, their new name, DEEDS, on the waiting list. We identified, since my time here, September of 08, about 65 eligible individuals in about approximately 8 counties. We have helped families access, interpret, and complete applications for the DEEDS or Family Services, Family Support Program, and our Medicaid waiver programs. And it is a state-funded position, as Carol mentioned prior to. Carolina, in the back, she is the brain and heart of the monthly parent support group. She started about 2006 with an average of 5 participants. In December of 2009, by that time, the groups got so large that she had to separate them into groups. One that have been there for 3 or more years, and the newcomers, there are different needs for both groups that they have. The newer ones, they're searching for information, for resource, somebody for support, somebody to just share their pain and get educated, of course. So we had, in a list though, we have about 50, 60 participants, 60 individuals. So it has grown, and we're very excited. She has had approximately 15 guest speakers, some from STEP, TIS, Autism Society, and a psychologist. She has a psychologist from Mexico that really works with the groups that have been the most time participating. We also have special family events. As many groups, family is very important. And when we get special events together, it brings us closer and we build a relationship. We had Special Olympics opening ceremony participation, which was wonderful. We had some t-shirts, red, that represents the Americas, the red ring at the Olympics. We had El Protector, which is a program from Metro Police in Davidson County, and it's wonderful. They came in and just tried to work with the families and making sure that the children's seats are proper because we don't use them, really. We had a wonderful Christmas party that all my friends really stayed behind, and we were able to give gifts to all the kids. We had Santa Claus. I'm sure you had seen some pictures. It was really awesome. And also to see El Protector, the police, mingling and being with the families there. It was nice to see. We have been able to get tickets free of charge to many events. And as I say, we're trying to get at least one event a month so we can come together. And also, if the children with disability cannot participate, the siblings definitely could. And sometimes we don't count them. And in something typical again, the groups meet from March to December. It appears that January and February, with the cold, it's very hard to have them participate. These are some of the pictures of what we were talking and the disability Pathfinder flyer inviting the parents to participate. What Kennedy Center activities they have come together also that our families have been able to participate, which is so wonderful. And we must thank the Kennedy Center that they made it easier for our families to participate. And they purchased some microphones and some equipment so we can have a live interpretation, and we can integrate and unite the families and be all at one. And that's, I think, what we're all about. We have had about 10 to 15 families participating in the Family First program, which is awesome, Lynette. SIP Saturday, well, you have been in part of them, and so I thank you. SIP Saturdays, Ashley is here. We have had about 10 siblings participating. Autism clinic, Triad. We have been kind of a liaison between the clinic and the Spanish-speaking community, and we want that partnership and collaboration to continue. We just recently had a meeting together, and we're working things that coming up with ideas that we can work more and more together. Act Early. Act Early, thank you so much. We have collaborated in promoting early intervention for developmental disabilities. And the Spanish media has really backed up this initiative. Again, community outreach, language differences. We're going to talk about how can we do the community outreach. This, we're talking about Spanish-speaking community, but I believe this is kind of a basis for all communities with just small variations. With diversity in the number of countries that speak Spanish, there are also numerous dialects and slight variations in words, change of meaning. That's a big thing. So the message to communicate, it may vary. And as you see things around us, we have Spanish spoken in Spain, Europe, in Mexico, North America, all mostly Central American countries, most of South American countries, with exception of a big country, which is Brazil, that speaks Portuguese, and some other in a Caribbean country, in a Caribbean area, that speak different languages. But again, the Spanish, it's different. Also, we have to consider the numerous dialects by keeping the vocabulary basic and simplifying your message. We're always talking about that prior to translating our flyers and any other materials that we may want to share. Information and materials distributed should be simple and brief so it reaches as many educational levels as possible. A parent or family member must develop a rapport and establish a level of trust with bilingual providers before effective communication can take place. And I think we spoke before about different things that we do. Many agencies think that if they have somebody bilingual in staff, they're ahead. Of course they're ahead to a certain level, but you cannot sit in your office and expect things to happen. You have to go to the community and make them happen. The other point is, one is language, the other one is cultural differences. We have to acknowledge cultural differences such as time and distance. We don't have a concept of time. As you can see, we mellow, you know, we're very mellow. And that's my last name, Mellow. So I think it goes very well. But for us, it's if the child is sleeping and it has a doctor's appointment, the doctor can wait. I'm going to let my child sleep because my child is growing while he or she is sleeping. Distance is another matter, you know. So another thing is you have to assure the clients of the profession confidentiality. That is very important, because if they understand that you are there for whatever a point that you're trying to solve, that's the main thing. You don't know, you don't want to know. When I meet you, I don't ask you, are you documented, not documented, what is your status in this country? We don't ask you that. I just talk to you and become friends, or I will serve you as a professional. And we try to do the same. Stress inclusion versus segregation of people with disability. That is a big issue in many cultures. We're still working in this country with that. I remember 70, 75, I work at Princeton Middle School as a teacher's assistant, and I work with people with disability, and we were completely isolated, segregated from the rest of the school system. And nowadays it's different, and we try to unite, to have a unity of all people. Keep in mind that many families communicate through personal, person-to-person networks, and that's why it is so important that we're out there. We talk about that. Utilize the Spanish-speaking providers network whenever it's possible. And we're doing that all the time. Carolina is great. She works with many people from the Vanderbilt Hospital, from the Kennedy Center. She has really been a bridge for us and a liaison bringing us all together, and I thank her for that. Again, community outreach and training activities. We're building relationships is the key factor when working with diverse cultures. And I think I have emphasized that quite a bit along this. Presentations at local, regional, and statewide meetings and conferences. We have been doing that. We're very involved at city, state, federal level. Everybody's well involved. Also, we have annual disability services and the Hispanic Community Conference. And Carolina also has taken the lead on this for the last 2 or 3 years. And you can see last year it was a very great program that she had, brought sexuality to people with disabilities on the table. And we were kind of all scary about it. But she did a great job. Coordinate talk shows featuring Camino Seguro agencies on 3 different radio stations in Middle Tennessee. And that has been a great opener and richer and educate the community. It has been agencies that come into us and say, how can I be part of Camino Seguro? Which is great. Also, you know, the people say, the agencies say, well, it was so great. I had 20 calls from people asking what kind of programs we have because they had heard it on the radio. And I think the radio is the closest point to bring us together. We're working, we're cooking, we're taking care of the kids, we're listening to the radio. So it's a great indirect way of educating and bringing all this into the community. Staff attends regular networking, community meetings, and activities around the state, and we mentioned that before. And leave it to my friend, Aram Torabian, coming over, and he will explain to us about Kurdistan and the Kurdish community. Thank you.
How's everybody doing today? All right. Thank you, Cecilia. Before, I just want to thank Kennedy Center for giving us the opportunity. And I would like to thank everybody for coming here today and listening to our efforts to help people in the community in Nashville and around the country. My name is Aram Torabian. I'm from Kurdistan. I'm the newest member of Pathfinder. I was hired also in September, so we got something in common. We are, this project, the Kurdish Outreach Project, it's a very new project. So I don't have as much as things done as the Spanish project has done. But what I will go through is just a quick facts about Kurdistan and the barriers and the ways to work those barriers out to get into the Kurdish community, because it's a very different community compared to other communities in Nashville, and kind of working with them, it's you have to go around some kind of laws and like rules to kind of work with them. Quick facts: Kurdistan is a region in Middle East, which is divided between four countries, Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria. The population of the Kurds, we cannot say like put our hands on the exact number, but we estimate between 35 to 40 million Kurds, which that makes us the biggest and largest ethnic group without their own land and country. And this struggle for getting a country and a land and recognized as a Kurdistan been going on over hundreds of years, like a couple of centuries, and still exists till this day. Until today, the only part that is actually recognized as Kurdistan is the northern part of Iraq, which is has a semi-autonomous government called the Kurdish Regional Area in Iraq. So they kind of get recognition over there, but in the other parts, there is no recognition of Kurds or whatsoever, and the massacre still exists. Kurds are being traced back all the way to 6,300 BC. It could also go back, but that's so far the things that we have found. It dates back all the way back then. There are books and writings that will trace back all the way to later dates, but we just kind of stick with 6,300 BC for now. Because of the area that Kurdistan exists, the majority of Kurds are Muslims. But also, Kurdish areas in all four countries are the only parts that you have Kurds which are Christians, Jewish, Baha'i, Yazidi, or Zoroastrian Kurds, and they all live in peacefully. And actually, the good thing about this is all the other religion minorities in all those countries, they all moved to the Kurdish areas because that's the only part in those countries that they're not being discriminated against or killed or kicked out of their own areas. So now we go into barriers. As I said, it's a very different culture. Gender is a big issue. Maybe it's because religious-wise or whatnot, but religion, like the gender, females are more comfortable with female talking. I mean, I'm pretty much, I'm sure that everywhere else too, but for example, a female wouldn't want to come talk to me about some issues. But the whole gender issue is a big thing within the Kurdish community, and that's one thing that we have to approach very carefully for working with the Kurdish community. The other one is dialects. Just like Spanish, Kurdish dialects, actually there are many dialects. There are three top dialects, and each dialect narrows down to at least five more sub-dialects. And each city has their own way of speaking that dialect. So it could get very hectic when you try to get like people from five or six cities from region. It's a funny conversation to listen to, just making fun of each other the entire time. The family structure. The family structure is you have the elder of the family always on top. The elder of the family has the final say on many things. Even if the kid is married and like the guy is 50 years old or the young lady is 50 years old, and they have kids, and their kids are married, they still refer back to the eldest of the family for all decisions. The parents always live with the kids, no matter what. The nursing home or such things, that does not exist. It's like a shame for the in Kurdish culture to put your parents in nursing home. So until the day they're alive, you have to take care of them. That's like a duty for us to take care of. So that is one of the barriers for working with them, because it's a whole different culture with the American culture. So kind of getting that balanced out is kind of hard. Social classes. Disability in Kurdish culture is very, it's not an open subject for a lot of families. To build that, like, a lot of people are just ashamed to kind of come out and say that, oh, for example, my child has a disability or some kind, like any kind of disability. They look at it as a way of bringing themselves down. And I know a lot of families that they have left their kids or people that, like the part of their family that have disability at home, which they attend, like, let's say, parties or anything like that. Their most recent one, we actually had a gathering, and a family came that they have a child with a disability, and everybody was inside, and my dad asked, where's your son? And his name is Aram, too, by the way. And he was like, oh, he's in the car. The child has some kind of disability, I'm not sure. But they left him in the car just because he makes a lot of noise, or he just wants to run around or just, you know, just have fun and play. So they left them in the car, and they would just go, every 30 minutes, one person would go sit by it. And that's one thing. My dad got mad and just went and brought the kid in, and the toys, and of course, my dog was there. So they're all playing, right? That's one. Religion, as I said, the different religions. The rules of each religion is different, just like how it is in Christianity, Islam, Yazidi, Judaism, and all this stuff. They're all different. So we have to be careful for those rules and sensitive areas so we do not cross. The other one is regional. As I said, all the countries that are, we are divided into, they all have... True, our culture is very similar, but also within those borders, there are some differences, so we have to be careful. Like, for example, there will be some differences between me, which I'm a Kurd, from Iranian part of the Kurdistan, with the person which is from the Turkish part of Kurdistan. They're different, but we also have to have an understanding and kind of work around that differences and kind of work with the common thing, which that's kind of become a barrier sometimes. Now we go to solutions. One part is the most important was educating them, educating the people. We have to also understand the culture, the way that people work, communicate, the rules and the laws of the culture. We have to understand them before doing anything with the people. The other one, I think that's a huge thing with every project, building trust. Because as I said, it's not open, for example, in Kurdish culture, it's not an open subject for having like any kind of disability. You have to build that trust for them to come forward to you and be like, for example, I have this kind of disability. Could you help me out? And the way that they will understand that you're not there to make fun of them or to bring them down. You're there to actually help them out. So building that trust is very essential and very important. Translating documents. This part is a big part, and I have been spending a lot of time on this part. We have different dialects, as I said. The way speaking, the way writing it is very different, like in each part. Also, there are two scripts to the Kurdish language. You have the Arabic script and you have a Latin script. Older generation pretty much is good with the Arabic script of the Kurdish. And the younger generation, just because they hear and they like learn how to write and read with English, they're pretty much more comfortable with the Latin version of it. And I've been working on Arabic script and also Latin script with two dialects, Sorani and Badini, which are the consist of most of the Kurds in Nashville. Also, just want to let you guys know, Nashville is called the Little Kurdistan because it has the most Kurds living here, about 12,000 Kurds. So, but majority of them are Sorani and Badini. So I've been trying to translating this script into both languages, I mean both dialects, and also to both scripts, which could be hard sometimes because of the wording and everything else. Building friendship within the community. That kind of go back on the trust, but also we have to go into the community and build that connection with the people. Also kind of letting them know what we are about. When you build that friendship with them, they come forward to you easy. And they will approach you easier, and like they will not look at you and be like, okay, what is this guy doing here? Why is he here? They will come to you easier. And since I've been working in the Kurdish community for like over 5 years now, with the youth level, I know I'm not much of a youth, but back in the time when I was, but I kind of built that trust with them, with their kids. And the way that now the families come to me if their kids had some kind of problem, school or acting-wise or like in any way, culture differences or anything like that. So I feel like I built that trust. And we have to also build such trust with the families to kind of make them ease, be in ease to come forward to you and talk to you. And I'm working on that. So 12,000 Kurds is a lot to kind of go around with. So reaching out to the Kurdish organizations. There are actually, I would say, about 10 to 12 Kurdish organizations that are active in Nashville. And we could also use their help because they have a lot of influences in the Kurdish community. We could use their help. We could join forces on many issues and many projects. That way, there won't be a lot harder for us. Also, we could get them involved and make them feel like they actually own this project. It's theirs, so might as well use it. And they will go forward and let more people know. Just like the Spanish community, the word of mouth. Honestly, God, the one thing I would say right now to a Kurdish person, by 12 o'clock at night, 8,000 Kurds know it. So that's how easy this could like spread, you know? There are good and bad parts about that too, so. Families, as I said, it's like building friendship. What I tried to do, I targeted the head of the family and also the youth of the family. That way, they both have some kind of information about what is going on and what we are about, and make them like communicate easier about our project and what we're trying to do. So as we work on these flyers and trying to get all the scripts and all the dialects ready, I'm hoping that way I could reach out to the older generation and also to you. That way it makes it a little easier for both generations to come together and kind of talk to us about what disabilities and what helps they need in the community. So far, I know I'm not as good as Spanish, but I have about 20 to 25 people which work in the state and like all the healthcare places and every different fields, and about 5 or 6 organizations on the same page with me. And it's just work in progress daily. So, and me being a student and just working for like limited time hours because of my studies and all that, I'm working around it. So I'm working on it. That was it for me. Thank you for listening. And I'll give it back to Carol for now. Thank you.
Always thought my mouth was bigger than that. I hope this gives you an idea of how outstanding the staff is across the street. We just have a fabulous staff. And in fact, since we started, Claudia, you remember the deal about time and distance and things? Claudia has arrived. And I just wanted to point her out because she's been with us for 6 years, and I'm having a very hard time realizing that she is no longer employed at Pathfinder. In fact, I can't even talk about it much. But so it's always wonderful to have her back. The next section we do want to talk about is outreach into the African American community. And Elise is going to finish today and kind of do the wrap up. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carol. Well, at the risk of asking for too much applause, I hope all of you are feeling the same kind of proudness and admiration for all of the work that's going on. So I hope you'll join me for a round of applause for the entire Pathfinder staff and all they've done. But with all the good work done, there's still so much more to do. And so that's really my charge, to finish up about what is the future. You know, this really all started because we heard over and over years ago, a family either has a challenge, a child with a disability or an adult with a disability, and what do? And you add on top of that the cultural diversity or the language barrier, and, you know, for some of the folks you're working with, you really don't have anything if you can't communicate. And so we know there is so much more here to do. Our funder, the Administration on Developmental Disabilities, offered a national grant last year to partner with historically black higher ed institutions. And we did put together what we thought was a very good grant, partnering with both with Meharry Medical College and with Tennessee State University. Interesting thing in developing that grant proposal, and Terry Urbano was involved, Jan Rosemurgy was involved, Bob Hodapp, others, was there was already a lot going on. This grant would have allowed us to formalize some of that and open it up even more. Now, unfortunately, there were only two grants awarded nationally, and we weren't one of those two. But we do understand that the ADD will be offering that grant opportunity again next year, and we do fully intend to compete. And that would give us some opportunities like having a staff person at Meharry working with their Department of Pediatrics, or having a part-time staff person at TSU working in their Center for Service Learning. Because when we went over to talk about partnering with them, what they told us is, we'd love to do that. We have all these students that we really want to place in disability-related projects, and we don't have the infrastructure to do that. So that is in our future. The other opportunity that we have, and it's with mixed feelings, as Carol just said. Part of this is happening because Claudia is going on to complete her master's in social work. But, you know, there's nothing that says after you complete that you can't come back here, Claudia. But what we are doing in posting Claudia's position is we are turning that into a director multicultural outreach project. So we've already taken it farther than Hispanic anyway, but we want to acknowledge that at a center level. This position will be posted, and we hope that you'll help us get the word out about it and think of folks who might be interested. And also think about how we involve this same effort in all of our research, training, and service projects. We're already pushing out in a number of the training and service projects that you've heard about. And I know in the instance working with Lynette, when some of our researchers have had questions about working with diverse communities and populations, this has been a resource, but we want to do even more. So that position will be posted very soon, as soon as Carol and I get all our work done with Sue. But that's really what the future is. It's even more than what we're doing now. So I think that concludes the formal part of this presentation. We do want to end just a little bit early for questions, and also so you can spend time with all these wonderful displays and also with some of the food. So I guess I'd like to stop right here and see if y'all have questions for any of the presenters. And we can either have those with the group, or we can do them informally when we get through. Carol.
Lots of questions, but I'll take two. Thank you. Let's see. Okay, around you, we're talking about gender differences, and I was wondering, would it be correct to assume that in the Kurdish population, it's a more patriarchal society?
Well, not totally. I mean, first of all, in the Kurdish culture, In the Kurdish culture, in family, there's always been that even ground for female and male. Also, I don't want to go into the politics of it, but in the Kurdish freedom fighters right now, you have male and female serving at the same time, at the same place together, in the mountain, the worst and the most, the harshest climates ever. And they are even. And like, my parents were both freedom fighters, and so they both served at the same places. They had to go through snow, which was all the way here, rain, the heat. Sometimes some families, maybe the way it's structured, the lady is kind of looked down on, which recently that has changed big time. The Kurdish females have stepped up. They hold positions and they have a bigger grasp on the family and everything. And the males in the new century as we go on, the Kurdish male, they always acknowledge that equality, and it's been working on. It just kind of, it went like this, and it's coming back up now again. So.
Another question? Maybe one more, and then we will break so we can enjoy these displays and the food. Yes?
I know that you're part-time and your position is new. I know that things used to exist in our community, like the Kurdish Forum and other things, lost their funding and have sort of disappeared. Is there a database yet, or will there be? I know you said you're figuring out who the individuals are in different healthcare settings and things like that. And then my other bigger question for the Kennedy Center related to that, are we going to be offering training to anybody like the mental health centers or anything about not only disabilities but cultural diversity and disabilities?
The second part, yes.
Yeah, there used to be Kurdish Forum, and it was like a Kurdish Yellow Page or something like that. And they lost funding, so they kind of closed down their program. But now, there's not such database. There are organizations that are working on, like, business databases and things like that, youth database or help database. But there is nothing that could, there is not an actual database that could get everything together in the same place. I'm hoping after, like, as I go on, I build that database for every field there is. And so far, I've been having luck with getting, like, each person from each field, and I'm hoping I go on more. So hopefully in the near future, with the help of them.
Great. Thank you. Well, Terry, thanks for organizing us. Carol, Cecilia, Aram, thank you so much for this. We'll end a little early. Let's give another round of applause, and then please enjoy.